Hello and welcome to the Evergreen Way podcast, where we explore how to be a healthy leader for the long haul. My name is Andy Needham, and I have the privilege of serving on the team with Converge Northeast. And today I'm going to bring you a conversation with someone who I really enjoy talking to, and that is Derek Sanford, who is the senior pastor, lead pastor at Grace Church out in Erie, Pennsylvania. And, you know, a lot of us have been thinking about, pondering, considering, what does the future of the church look like? And today we are talking to someone who I believe is pioneering one of the expressions of what the future of the church looks like. If you are someone who needs more leaders, who is interested in developing leaders, which as church leaders, we should be all about, this is a absolutely invaluable conversation for you. No matter the size or scale of your church, this is going to help shatter some stereotypes, maybe some assumptions that you've made, and help you reimagine, have a holy imagination as we talk about today, about what the church and what leadership could look like going into the future. I want to encourage you to check out Derek's website, DerekSanford.com, where he has a bunch of resources. He is prolific in terms of putting out things. And sort of his life's work, which we're going to talk about today, is summarized in his book, Untapped Church, which you can find all over. But honestly, as he talks about in the podcast, if you go to the website, it's honestly a great way to be able to support what he is doing. So I cannot wait to jump into this conversation. We had a blast together. We could have kept going. We'll probably have to have Derek back to explore some other things that he touches on towards the end of the podcast as well. So without any further ado, here's my conversation with Derek Sanford. It's my joy and pleasure to welcome to the Evergreen Way podcast, Derek Sanford, pastor of Grace Church, Erie, Pennsylvania. Derek, thank you so much for jumping on today.
Hey, it's so awesome to be with you, Andy. Thank you so much for the invitation.
I have had the joy and privilege of being in a lot of the same spaces as you at Converge events, at Northeast Collaborative events. I've gotten to hear some of your teaching and workshops, and I'm honestly excited just to be able to have this conversation and ask you some of the questions that I've had, hearing about the incredible things that God is doing at your church. You are not new to Grace Church, though, and I'm not trying to call you old by any means. And matter of fact, I can't believe that you've been at the church as long as you have. So can you share a little bit about Grace Church and how long you've been there and the journey that God has had you on in terms of that?
Sure, I'd love to. Yeah. And again, thanks for the privilege. So if you think I'm old, the church is even older. So we're a good old 1895 Swedish Baptist church. So we belong in Converge, you know, from the get-go. But I've been at Grace going on 30 years now. So came here in 1995 was when I started, and have served in a variety of capacities over the years. Started as the youth pastor, and then I was the worship pastor, the small group pastor, the outreach pastor, anything that needed to be done. But I served longest time as executive pastor, and then for the last 13 years, I've been the lead pastor. So, wow. So I've been here for 30. My predecessor was here for 33, I think. So, okay. You know, we've had a good long run between the two of us, and Grace, I think, has benefited from that longevity.
Well, thanks for your faithfulness in that, in those different journeys. It's interesting to think you've been there since the internet was started and then live streaming through the pandemic. So, you know,
exactly.
That's a pretty incredible thing. I want to talk.
Yeah, cell phones. Yeah,
cell phones.
Too,
that's right. Way, yeah. So, yeah. You didn't have a cell phone plan when you first started at the church. That's for sure. You know, it's a cool thing. Longevity has such fruit in ministry. And you've also got to see the church from different seats on the bus, which I think is also a great privilege because it helps you have empathy for those you serve underneath you and different perspectives. And so how has God used that, those different perspectives of being in youth ministry, obviously a lot of years as executive pastor, to help form how you lead Grace?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think, yeah, there is the variety of experience, which I think is very beneficial when it comes to leading a church, and kind of understanding the different roles that are involved. And even, you know, now what we're talking about, you know, volunteer leadership, just understanding what's involved really at every level of the church, I think that has served me well. But, you know, the old adage is you can't be a great leader without being a great follower. And I think learning how to follow, learning how to be patient, learning how to wait, for my shot. I mean, I always knew I was a leader. I always knew I was going to lead, be the point leader of a church. To, you know, to kind of hang in there for a really long time. And really Al Detter, who was my predecessor, he and I started the conversation about 5 years before I ended up moving into the role. And so, you know, again, there's a lot of dynamics that go on, you know, when you're in that second chair. And I'm very grateful for the opportunities that he gave me, probably too soon to be preaching, mm-hmm. and too soon to be, you know, doing vision and some of the big parts of being a lead pastor. He really allowed me to do from the second chair, which I'm very grateful for. But then, you know, you wait for 5 years knowing that that day is coming, but not knowing exactly when. And I just learned a lot there. I think it developed my character. I think it helped my humility. It helped my patience. It helped, you know, all those things I think that come in handy when you're in the lead seat. You know, to be developing those from a second or third chair, I think is really, really critical.
Mm. No, that's really insightful. What in terms of succession, I'm sure there's things that went great, things that you wish went differently. But if you had to give counsel to a church who is thinking about succession specifically, you know, what would be maybe just one or two high level things that you'd be like, hey, watch out for this, or make sure you focus on this?
Yeah, I mean, I think obviously this is a passion of mine, and I realize not every church is kind of positioned this way, but man, my strong feeling is to raise that up from within, you know, to start really, really early, probably start earlier than you think, for lead pastors that are listening. You know, I'm 52 right now. I've been thinking about succession for me for 5 years already, and trying to identify internal candidates that are kind of coming up through the ranks, giving them special assignments. I'm doing a lot of this incognito, yep. But, you know, so think about it earlier than you think you have to. And I think is one thing. And then, and really just look inside the church. I think churches, I'm just afraid we've adopted a secular version of staffing. Mm. And it's not biblical, and it's okay. It's okay. But it's okay only as a, I feel like as a second rate kind of desperation move. But I think a much more biblical model is to understand who's coming, who are you discipling up through the ranks? The Bible talks about a couple of things, you know, who's fruitful, who's trustworthy, you know, who's faithful and fruitful are the main two, you know, qualities that the Bible puts on what's required for leadership in the church. And so, you know, the only way to get a real look at that is not through some search agency that's bringing somebody from across the country. It's from spending time with somebody in your own system.
Yeah, well, you're speaking the language of what this is all about. The Evergreen Way is about leader health, and we talk about fruitfulness and faithfulness. You know, Psalm 1 or Jeremiah 17, especially we anchor in Jeremiah 17, which talks about the tree that is planted by the stream of water that yields its fruit in and out of season, and that its leaf does not wither when the heat comes, which is that, you know, those two things together are so critical. You know, and this also just hits something else that's a passion point for mine, because I think churches are having to reckon with the reality that their next pastor on the white horse from the great seminary off in the West is not riding over that hill. And we're entering into a new era. And I think it's a reformation back to the historic parish development of theological and leadership, which is what you're all about. And
couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And so I think we feel that, but honestly, I feel like you guys have gone through the wall first in some ways. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I want to encourage all of our listeners, the things that we'll touch on in part today are expanded in large in your book, Untapped Church. And I love this byline that you have on your book, which is discovering the potential hidden in your congregation. And so can you share the heart behind this work and the way that you have cast this vision for those that you lead?
Yeah, sure. You know, I think that, you know, we hit a moment like most churches do where you realize that there's more ministry to be done than you have people to do it. And so you kind of find that frustration point of going, man, I feel like God has called us to this, but I feel like we have a staff that can accomplish this, and what to do with that calling. And again, I think we've settled for a kind of a secondary idea of what it looks like to staff the church. And so part of it was just a real revolution in the way that we saw how leadership in the church could happen. And that word untapped, the reason I chose it, I love it very much because the dictionary definition is available but not used. And I thought, man, if that doesn't describe churches, I believe churches in America, and I big churches, small churches, urban churches, suburban churches, I think it's across the board that there's this sense that there are people in our congregations who are available to do great things for God who are not being used. And whether it's because pastors haven't had the imagination for it or didn't know it was possible, or, you know, we're kind of putting the lid on themselves because of some control freak tendencies, you know, whatever it may be, that we have people in our congregations who are available to be used by God. And I remember, you know, it was early in my days as lead pastor, and we were experiencing some of that frustration. And we went away on a staff retreat, and I stood at a whiteboard. We did the old SWOT analysis, you know, strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. And the aha moment came at the end of that exercise when we had the board full of all the usual stuff, you know, worship and kids ministry and all this stuff. And somebody said the phrase, and it was just the way they said it. They said, where would our people fall on that board? Where do our people go? And it was just it was general enough, but specific enough that it caught everyone's attention. And for me, bursted the floodgates open in my mind. I said, our people are our greatest strength. I put them right at the top of the, you know, a little bit of gap in the S section there, and just said, actually, they're our greatest strength. They can do things we can't do. They can reach people we can't reach. They have skills we don't have. They have passions we don't understand. Like, our people are our greatest strength. And I think it's very biblical to think that way, but it took that exercise to kind of shift our focus. And so really from that day forward, we began a process of inviting volunteer leaders onto our staff into roles that matched their capacity. And we didn't let any kind of traditional, you know, role limits kind of limit them, but just said, you know, if there's somebody who's running a company and running, you know, the easiest illustration to understand is to say, you know, we brought a volunteer in unpaid, and he was the leader of all of our pastors. So he was deciding their salaries. He was deciding their vacation requests. He was leading them, doing their check-ins, and he wasn't paid. And so, you know, it was just, we tried to just take the lid off and said, whatever level of this church that you want to rise to, that your gifts allow for, we want to make space for you to use those gifts.
How do you think churches, or maybe even from your own experience, you mentioned the lid, and I resonate with that, but what does that actually mean in the local church? Like, what does it actually look like? And how do we, I don't think that's the intention of most leaders to do that, no. But that often is probably the reality. Yeah. So how does that flesh out?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that there's there is an imagination problem. I think that's kind of the first thing. There's a chapter in my book that talks about the six barriers of pastors that I think spells this out. But, you know, where we just kind of convince ourselves either, you know, we don't have people in our, we don't have anybody in our church like that. And, you know, to people that would say that, I just say, please get more curious, because I just don't think that's true. Like, there are people in your churches who are gainfully employed by some company for 40 years or whatever that did things in the world that could probably benefit the church, you know? And so this idea that, you know, we don't have anybody like that in my church, I would encourage curiosity. Mm. You know, and I think sometimes people get, you know, stuck on roles, you know, there's a role that only certain credentialed people can do and that sort of a thing. And even that, I would encourage churches to push the limits. You know, I mean, we came we were a traditional kind of committee led church. And so, you know, we had the search committee and the, you know, whatever that would put people onto committees and, you know, all
the committee
stuff.
Committee,
the committee, yeah, the committee to make the committees. And, you know, and it's like, there were some of those things that we just had to begin to, do, you know, move away from, to allow people to kind of rise to whatever level of leadership they can. So part of it, honestly, Andy, is just the need for renewed imagination by pastors in terms of what's possible. And I'll tell you one other quick story in talking about these roles. When I knew we had something special here, we're a multi-site church, and our largest site is about 1,000, was at that time about 1,000 people. And so we're a big church for sure. And but when I walked into the staff meeting of that site's staff, of our, again, 1,000 person church, and looked around, there's about 20 people in the room. There's a site pastor, campus pastor, whatever, kids pastor, youth pastor, you know, all the people. I looked around the room, there's about 20 people in the room, and there was one part-time paid worship leader was the only person in that room receiving a salary from our church. And so, you know, you look around the room and go, oh my gosh, our largest site is actually being led entirely by volunteers, including the pastor all the way through. And it's like, I think that's unusual. I don't think there's many places doing that. And that was kind of the first moment where I was like, wow, that I really, but it's because we didn't say, man, our campus pastors have to be paid, you know, or our youth pastors have to be paid, or what, you know, that we allowed our imagination to expand outside those boxes and go, man, if God's calling somebody to something, he's giving them capacity and gifting towards something, and they don't need to take a salary. Like what are we doing with it? It's incredible.
So how did you recalibrate both culture and expectations? Like, I'm sure that there were some just barriers that were, you know, scheduling would be one that would come to mind. Mm-hmm. Like, how did you kind of move the, align the organization with this vision?
Yeah. So, you know, I think you mentioned that first one, and that was the big one, is we started to fill our staff with volunteer leaders, to the point where we have basically 2/3 of our staff. So when we have staff meetings, 2/3 of those people are not being paid by the church. And so, you know, that does create some structural and cultural issues. One of the first big challenges with our existing paid staff, because we used to have staff meetings on Tuesday afternoons, you know, 1 to 3 or whatever it was. And when we went to our paid staff and said, listen, you know, we've just recruited 7 new people. This was the first wave. 7 new people to come onto our staff. They've all agreed to do so. They all have real jobs in the real world. And, but we want to treat them as full staff members. And so we're going to have to move our staff meeting from 1 to 3 on Tuesdays to 5:30 to 7:30 on Tuesday evenings. And we're going to provide dinner and we're going to do some other things. And, you know, that was the first wave of pushback, you know, because it's like another evening and that sort of a thing. But we were able to convince our staff very quickly that the positive of this is going to outweigh the negative, that actually opening up the floodgates to more leaders is going to cause you less evening obligations in the end. But we need to get from here to there to get more leaders at the table. And so, you know, that was one of the things, you know, I think, you know, we've tried to just blur, if not erase, the line entirely between paid and unpaid leaders. So when we list our staff out on, you know, any public thing, websites, or back then it was bulletins or whatever, you know, we listed them just like our staff, no little V in parentheses next to their name to say that they're a volunteer or whatever. It's just like, this is our staff. We gave them business cards. We gave them, you know, office spaces. We gave them email addresses. We gave them name tags that for Sundays that our other staff would wear. We just tried to erase the lines entirely. And we're at the point now where our key volunteer staff, you know, I mean, they're doing performance reviews like everybody else. They're submitting vacation requests like everyone else. And, you know, and people are like, how could you make a volunteer submit a vacation request? Like, they're, and it's like, they're so important. We need to know when they're gone. This is not to put them in any funky thing. It's like legit for us to operate. Their role is so important on our team that they just like anybody else, we need to know when they're gone. Our volunteers, we need to know, you know. So
in terms of the leadership side of this, championing the vision of it, how did you, I mean, again, you're the point leader, you're carrying the flag up the hill. You're obviously cultivating that into the congregation. I'm sure it's not just like you preach one sermon and then you change everything. You know, most of the leadership is banging the same drum until people are like tired of it. So how did you bang that drum with your organization to be able to help them, people understand what you're doing?
I will say I do preach on this often. I do preach on the priesthood of all believers and spiritual gifts and people using their gifts for the kingdom. So that has been part of our vocabulary for a long time. And then, you know, I'm a huge believer in storytelling. And so as often as we can tell the story, you know, of our staff, our volunteer staff and people that are, you know, serving without pay, we've really tried to make them the heroes of our culture. And so it's become a thing to aspire to. And again, you know, we talked offline here at the beginning, this takes a long time. I mean, I don't want people to assume that you can just do this overnight. I mean, that this was building into our culture for a while, and there are fights that we fought for a while in order to arrive where we are. But these days, I mean, it's from the other side, I mean, it's unbelievable because it's aspirational now. Yep. People, I mean, there's volunteer staff that we've tried to pay. And that they won't take it. They're like, don't make me one of those lesser people. You know, I mean, I'm joking about that, but it's a thing to aspire to. These are our heroes.
Yeah. No, I love that. I love the fact that you mentioned too, that you're still preaching on it. Like that's the, you know, I grew up as a worship leader many years, and I always had the phrase of leadership that applies is like, by the time the band's sick of the song, the congregation's just learning. Feels like they've heard it once before.
Yeah, they finally know it. Yeah,
and that is so much of vision leadership is that it's like playing the same song over and over. And you may be, you know, again, it's invigorating. This is your vision, but you may feel like you've said it enough, but you probably haven't. And so keeping, you know, you're still. Right. I love that you're still cultivating that all these years later. Now that this is already in the DNA of the church, and now you get to celebrate it. You know, it's a beautiful. Beautiful thing, which is awesome. So let's talk about engaging specifically like one-on-one. You mentioned that curiosity. Let's say that you have a suspicion. Let's go all the way from the idea of, I think I have someone in my church who probably has this capacity, but I'm not sure, to the point where I'm asking them to take on a role to be, in your context, an unpaid staff member. How do you explore that curiosity? And then how do you actually like make the ask to have them come onto the team?
Yeah. Well, I think as with all staffing, you know, there's a couple of options. And I think sometimes pastors get locked in a mode of filling holes, filling gaps. So like I'm fixated on the fact that we need a youth pastor and the youth pastor is our next hire. And if we don't get a youth pastor, you know, and we can get so fixated on that we actually miss opportunities to talk to these kinds of people. Because what may be the solution for that pastor is that maybe there's a high capacity leader out there who has gifts that could relieve his responsibilities in other ways that would allow him to continue leading the youth ministry, but he's getting 10 hours of relief over here from something else that he's currently doing. So, you know, I think, again, there's a creative aspect to this that if you're going to move in this direction, you really have to be leaning into how God has wired people and how God has called people themselves versus just filling holes. And so, you know, I really do think that the first step is really getting to know, you know, that person a little bit, what lights them up, what are they passionate about, what are some of their skills and abilities that they've cultivated over the years. And then when it comes to the ask, this is what blew me away when we first started this. You know, I was expecting, 50% success rate or so, you know, and it was 100% yes. And now it hasn't been that since always, but out of the gates, and I think it might've been just the goodness of God saying that this can work. But I will say you don't do cold calls from the stage. It sends the message that any old person with a pulse can do this. And, you know, the other thing is to, I've just seen so many examples, even on our own team, of people when they go to make the ask of apologizing or downplaying. And that is not what leaders respond to. So if you're going to the ask going, this isn't going to take you any time at all. You're going to be able to do this in your spare time. It's going to take you a couple hours a week at the most. Don't even worry about it. Don't think about it. A leader wants somebody to look them in the face and go, this is going to take your best thoughts. This is going to take your best heart work. This is going to take you surrendered before God to help us figure this out. But here's this big problem that we have. And we think you're the perfect person to help us solve that problem. And here's why, because of this experience that you've had, and because of this gift you've had, and this skill that you have, and this that you bring to the table. And here's a very realistic picture of what you'd be stepping into, but we're asking you to devote the better part of your, you know, week to helping us solve this big kingdom problem. I'm just telling you, that's the language leaders speak. So if you want followers, you can do the apologetic thing, but leaders step up to a big challenge. And so we've learned to just challenge them, be super honest with them up front. You know, don't tell them it's going to take 2 hours if it's going to take 10 hours, you know, and don't tell them that you're staff culture is perfect if it's dysfunctional. Just tell them, be honest, but also put the challenge out there without apologizing. And we've just found leader after leader steps up to that.
I love that entirely. And again, this is something that you can actually put this into practice, even if you're not fully developed into these systems. I think the way that churches often try to engage people into any role is, you know, if we don't get people, we're going to have to close down the kids program. You know, like, again, like right. The life preserver ask is not is not the way to move the ship forward at all. Like, if you want people to, yeah,
well, and
good.
That's right. And I mean, even there's an organizational life preserver thing of like, hey, we're going to shut this down if nobody steps up. That I've seen pastors do it themselves, of just being like, you don't take people, you're problems go, I'm so busy, I can't do anymore, I'm at the end of my rope, I need somebody to help me. And it's like, again, leaders don't, some people will respond to that, it just being compassionate and nice, but like, leaders don't want to hop onto a sinking ship. They want to hop onto something that's got a little stability and oomph left.
Yeah, and if anybody should have the clearest why and the most compelling reason for somebody to get engaged in something, it should be the local church. Like, I think that's why we've given our lives to this endeavor. And so it's honestly, you know, for a lot of us, the opportunity, I think, for the pastor that feels stuck, that they don't have enough help, which may be true, they may feel those things, is for them to recapture their first love and to remember their calling and to be able to, you know, invite other people into a new reality, which is an awesome thing. So that's great. Let's see here. What might be the first steps? Maybe we've already touched on this. You know, I do think it's important. You said this already, that, you know, you're kind of multi-generations now into this endeavor. I'm sure you've learned a lot through the best of it and making mistakes. But if I, let's just say I'm a pastor of a church of 125, I'm probably a solo pastor. Maybe I have some administrative or other part-time help. And I'm just trying to figure out, like, how would I even, I mean, I would say one thing, buy the book, give it to your elders. But after we do that, what do we do?
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I like that suggestion. I've encouraged pastor after pastor to start with one. That would be my, and get rid of the voices in your head that say it's not possible. Because to me, that is the very first hurdle that I've found every pastor needs to get over, is they talk themselves out of it. They go, nobody will do it. I don't have those people. They don't exist in my church. And we begin to make excuses. And I would just say, get those lies out of your head, and then find a person and start with one. You're not going to build a whole culture. You don't have to, there's not some big step-by-step system to go into. But like we said earlier, get curious about your congregation and say, is there one person out there? And again, we've cultivated some of the character qualities and even just life stage qualities that we're looking for that make the best ones of these creatures, you know? And so usually people that have some level of control over their own schedule, you know, that's a good, so whether they're business owners, maybe they work remotely and have a little bit more flexibility with their time, coaches and teachers who have a little bit of a, you know, a summer thing going, stay-at-home parents, you know, so there are some recently retired folks I think have been really, really good. So, you know, there are some profiles I think of people to have in your mind. I would say this though, look for people who are already busy. Don't look for people who have a ton of available time. That's not who you want. If they have a ton of available time, it means they're not the kind of high capacity leader you're looking for.
That's well said. I appreciate that. Yeah.
So, but I just think that curiosity about who's out there, and then just start taking a couple people to lunch and finding out more about them. And if you can match their gifts and skills with a role that's needed, that's going to further your church. And again, you got to be creative. Ask them to step into something. And I just think start with one.
Let's talk about the shadow side of these things. Are the challenges that you face with an unpaid staff person, how much of it is the same as you've experienced previous to embracing this model? And what would be unique? It sounds like you may have developed some systems with like having reviews and things like that to kind of suss that out. But is in terms of culture maintenance, you know, this is just my imagination. It's hypothetical, but like you could see some people feeling like at some point when stress hits, the voice comes up like, well, I'm not even getting paid to do this. Like, I'm not going to listen to you. Like, you know, they may be bought in on the front, but that could waver. So is there anything like that or other things that you can think of that would be, you kind of have to, in that cultivation and maintaining of the culture on the inside with the people you're leading?
Yeah, we haven't found that as much anymore than with a paid staff person, to be honest with you. I will say though, the turnover rate is a little quicker with volunteers. And we've kind of narrowed that down. Again, it's not scientific yet, but we've kind of said that the average lifespan of one of these high capacity volunteer leaders is about 18 months. And again, you can weigh that against paid staff people in the church, and it's not that much different.
That's an honest answer right there.
but we kind of go in with that mindset going, if we're thinking like maybe a 2-year-ish window for this role of saying, man, if you'd give us a great 18 months and give us 6 months of training up the next person, that would be just a huge win.
Good.
And we don't really find these people burning out after that time. A lot of them move into a different role.
Okay.
And that's what I would say is it's not necessarily like I've been doing this and I can't do this anymore. Mm-hmm. It's been, I've been doing this and I'd like to try something different.
Yeah.
And you know, it's almost like they've got this smorgasbord of choices now that they're, you know, not locked into a pay salary. And it's like, oh, this over here looks interesting too. So we found a lot of that transferring thing, but I would say the lifespan is a little shorter, than an average staff person. The opposite end of that spectrum though, is like, during COVID and after COVID, we found that our volunteers actually fared better through that than our paid staff. That our paid staff were quicker to move back with family or, you know, whatever. And our volunteers hung in there. And in the book, I talk a little bit about this idea of being anti-fragile. There's a great book out there called Anti-Fragile that just says when stress comes, you know, something fragile breaks, something that's not fragile, you know, may withstand it for a while and then breaks. Something that's anti-fragile actually gets stronger under stress. And I just found that to be our volunteer culture, that as we went through COVID, it actually strengthened it, solidified it instead of breaking it apart, which was really cool to see.
Yeah. Thanks for adding that point too, just about the defined term that you're kind of asking people to commit to. Because I think that is a distinction. You know, there are times when you might bring on somebody on a paid staff and hire them from the outside and you might say, hey, we're looking for 5 years, whatever it is. But, you know, we all know how durable those commitments are. But I do think for volunteers specifically, like I think you are connecting to something like one, that's a part of expectation setting, right? So that's a piece of that. And secondarily, like the people who are doing this, it is a passion project for them. So they may, you know, a lot of people may look at it and like, okay, I do want to just experiment and try a bunch of different things. Like that's, but what a great leadership development incubator. And then I'm sure the second lap is easier because they already at least know culture and they're, you know, like, yeah, moving somebody to a new role is almost like, all right, they want to keep going. Like, that's great. So
Totally. And honestly, it just makes one of the other benefits, it just makes it for a very deep bench. You know, you think about just people that are next in line to lead that next thing, that you're right. Once they know culture, you know, there can be a mix and match kind of thing of just go, we know you can lead. Can you lead this? Would you be passionate about this over here? And we just have a really deep bench, you know, in most areas. Super skilled positions are their own animal, you know, so it's just like those don't grow on trees. And so it's not like, you know, everybody can go produce a video, you know, in the studio kind of thing or mix a soundboard. So those are a little bit unique, but for most of the other departments, we just have super deep benches.
Have you had anybody in your history that has done this and said, man, I am actually going to change my vocation?
Oh, sure. Oh yeah. Yeah. That happens a lot. That happens a lot. People get a taste for ministry and want to change or want to make a switch. And we've also had the other, I mean, I'm going to be totally honest. We've had people that taste it and go, I never want to do that for my life. I'm happy that I'm,
well, it's so much safer to do it in this way though, than to actually, you know, exactly, go do a mid-career change and then have to try to get your job back.
Yeah, exactly. We actually had a surgeon
okay,
who left his career, wow, came onto our staff for a year and a half, donated it, and went back to surgery. But it was great. I mean, he had a super great run here. It was very, very, very helpful to us. And I think it was very helpful to him.
Yeah.
You know, I think he learned a lot about himself. He learned a lot about God and about his calling. And I mean, it was beautiful all around. So even those that may not look like the perfect success story, you know, God teaches us so much through those experiences. Yeah. And I think just having the space for somebody to explore something like that is just, I'm proud of that.
Yeah, no, I mean, really that is the dream of it. I mean, what you're describing, there's obviously the organizational benefit and the momentum of the vision, but that's really not detached from these people taking their next step. This is disciple making 101 in some ways. And you're creating a broad ecosystem. If we are going to develop the next generation of leaders, both vocational and non, like we have to create vast opportunities. Talking to another leader today about how they share the pulpit more. And I think that's another trend line. And it's not that these pastors are getting lazy, like it's actually harder, especially when you start to develop preachers and to work and to keep things where they need to be. But that's the only way forward if we're actually going to be able to sustain the churches we already have and start the churches that we need to, is we have to have this type of, I love that holy imagination is what I'm praying over the church right now. And it's things like this that get me excited. So when you look at the future of Grace Church and you think about what God has ahead of you, or just more broadly, the church, the Northeast, what gets you excited?
So this is very loaded, Andy, and we could go another hour or two on this if you really wanted to. I'll try to be as short as possible because we've just come through a big long process. We're calling it Future Church, so we're imagining the future of our church and really the church in this region. And I think that, you know, I'm excited, and it's a little bit of this model kind of on steroids. And because the things that we've been talking about at Grace right now are changing the scorecard and changing the finish line of discipleship, changing the scorecard of discipleship, changing the finish line of discipleship. So we've entered a process where we've reimagined what does a dream disciple look like for not in our church, for our region. And I think that process has been so helpful for us to go, what is this region around us that we're trying to reach? What are some of the trends? What are some of the issues? And then what does it look like to make disciples that are going to reach that region? And again, you can, obviously there's the common stuff, you know, we're going to read our Bibles and pray, right? Like that stuff. But it's like, we're trying to name what are some of the roles that our people could play as they live out their faith in the world that would actually benefit this region around us? And so that's the changing the scorecard piece. We've come up with four roles that we want really every person at Grace to kind of step into and fulfill in their life outside the walls where they live, work, and play kind of thing. And the second is changing the finish line. And this goes more to what we're talking about here. One of the things that has really gripped my heart and imagination is that I feel like we've done a great job raising up volunteer, high capacity volunteer leaders within the walls of the church. We're trying to reimagine the finish line outside the walls of the church and saying, what does it look like for us to do that same thing, to provide some of that same infrastructure, but to have it extend outside our walls? Because here's what's happening. We have a businessman runs a construction company here in town, and he's been coming for a while. He's one of these guys that's tried to make his company into basically a church. He's trying to care for his employees and their families as a pastor, disciple those on his team who are willing to be discipled. He's on mission in his workplace, and to have him come into our church, and he goes, I come and sit in. He's got like three employee small groups that he leads. Okay. And he comes in, he goes, every time you guys talk about leading a life group at Grace, I walk away feeling guilty. And I'm like, oh my God, shame on us. We haven't counted what he's doing. It doesn't count in our system. And I'm just laser focused on going, I want it to count on the church's scorecard. Every instance that we have in this community around us where people from our church are doing discipleship. Yep. One other example, I could go on forever. Other example, we just had a volunteer, and we do this all the time because we're a volunteer organization. And so, you know, we spotlighted volunteers, had them stand up. We gave them chocolates. We have a nice chocolate shop around here. We handed out chocolates during our services. Stand up if you volunteer. We listed all the stuff on the screen. I had a woman come up to me afterwards, and she says, at this stage of my life, I'm caring for my aging mom and dad. They're in a nursing home. And I've been organizing a Bible study with other people on their floor with my mom and dad every week. And again, she said, I felt guilty that I couldn't stand up for the volunteer acknowledgement today because I'm not volunteering at the church. And again, I'm like, this is ludicrous. We just haven't counted the actual discipleship that's happening all around us because we've had too narrow a focus on what's happening inside our walls. So anyways, I want to help a whole bunch of people find their calling and their discipleship mission field outside the walls of the church, and to take some of these tools and other things that we've created to help high capacity leaders and use them where they live, work, and play.
Yeah, I love that. You've probably heard it's a common great question that church leaders have asked for years, but I like a little nuance on it. You know, the classic question is, if your church closed tomorrow, you know, would your community notice? Which I think is a great question. But I think the other thing, because we've gotten so good at branding and all these things with the church, but the question I kind of nuanced that with is, if your church closed tomorrow, would the other churches of your region be filled with mature disciples of Jesus, or are they just disciples of your church?
Yeah.
Like, we actually sometimes disciple people to our brand. Like, we've gotten so good at branding and marketing, which is not that's not a dirty word in my mind at all.
Sure.
I love that. But, and what you're really talking about is blurring those lines, because if the only way a win happens is it has to be under the auspices of a program or a property of Grace, then you're really limiting the kingdom. You know, Jesus was sending people out all the time. His way. And so I love that reality. And I think especially, you know, seasons of life, because whether it's the single mom or the person caring for their parent who are aging, they're, you know, we're going to get to heaven and our eyes are going to be open to so much ministry that's happening that we have no way. And again, I don't think it'll be going to be a hard endeavor. I think you're not going to capture it all, but you will change the narrative. Yeah. Of people feeling like what they're doing matters. And that's a huge thing. So bravo. I encourage you in that. I love that so much. So yeah.
Thanks. One of the brain shift things for me is that somebody said, you know, what if you saw that business leader or that person who is leading the Bible study as one of your site pastors, your campus yeah. pastors, and that what they are doing is leading one of your locations as a church, how would you treat them differently? And that's the way we want to treat them,
yeah.
is to go, what would it look like to resource them, to cohort them, to help them to do that in a way that they feel like they've, you know, that they're serving God's purposes.
Derek, I want to say thanks for this conversation today. And one of the things that I just want to commend you personally on is that I feel like you haven't lost that curiosity and even that leadership ethic that you're saying of like, oh, we missed this, we need to shift this. Like, I pray that we all keep that kind of posture as we continue to lead, because that is how our holy imaginations will come to fruition as we get to be leaders. And we are followers of Jesus who are being discipled, and you know, you are a follower of Jesus who's being discipled, and I love that you're leading that way. So thanks for this conversation. I know you have some rich resources online, and again, we'll mention Untapped, which I know is available on all bookstores, but how can people connect with you?
Yeah, they can go. I'm old enough that I've got the Derek Sanford, DerekSanford on just about every platform.
Yes.
So they can follow me there, and really DerekSanford.com. If they're going to buy books, I would love for them to buy them through there.
Yeah.
It helps me out a little bit more, but it also allows me to sign it and send and really to get connected with places that are using that resource. And so there's a bunch of other stuff there as well, DerekSanford.com.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to finding ways down the road that we can have you come and interact with some of our pastors in person out here. I think that these post-Christian contexts are actually the most ripe
yes.
For this. And our need is to shift from that scarcity mindset to the opportunity mindset. But at the same time, we're actually in some ways already ahead of other parts of the country and how we're calibrated. So I think we can see God do some great things, and you've been leading that. So thanks so much, Derek. Thanks for this conversation today. It's been wonderful.
Amen. Thanks, Andy. I really appreciate you, man.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of the Evergreen Way podcast. On behalf of our entire team at Converge Northeast, it is a privilege to bring you these conversations to help you to be a healthy leader for the long haul. We would love to connect with you. Find us on Instagram at Converge Northeast, and feel free to send us a message. It's an easy way to connect. You can also send me an email directly at andy@convergenortheast.org. That's andy@convergenortheast.org. Let us know what resonates with you, as well as any ideas or suggestions for topics or interviews for future episodes. We appreciate it when you follow or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or Spotify, and know that a positive review is a simple way that you can help more people discover the Evergreen Way. Until next time, this is Andy Needham with Converge Northeast. Thanks so much for tuning in.